back in 2019, state lawmakers and Governor Andrew Cuomo enacted a law ensuring that veterans with a, quote, other than honorable discharge would be eligible for state veterans benefits. But in the ensuing years, it's become clear that these veterans haven't always been able to access state benefits and services. That could be changing as the result of legislation signed into law on Memorial Day from our next guest, Assemblymember Dee Dee Barrett, a Hudson Valley Democrat who chairs the Chamber's Committee on Veterans Affairs and joins us for a legislative update on a variety of veterans issues. Welcome back to the show, Assemblymember.
Thank you so much. I'm very happy to be here.
So, as I mentioned at the top, it was the intent of the state back in 2019 to ensure that veterans with an other than honorable discharge would still have access to benefits provided by New York, but there seems to be a gap on the federal level preventing that from happening in some instances. How does your bill, which was signed into law, fill that gap?
Well, our bill, which was the first in the country to address this, ensured that veterans who had been given other than honorable discharges as a result of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, or PTSD, or a military sexual trauma, or traumatic brain injury, would have a pathway to getting their state benefits. And the one piece of legislation that we passed this year that was signed by the governor on Memorial Day, it really kind of covers an omission that we had. And, you know, it was a very complicated bill. It was there were a lot of pieces of law that were touched by it. And, you know, it was an unintentional oversight because the way the language originally read, the diagnoses needed to come from a VA. But by the very nature of the situation that these veterans are in, they are not accessing the VA in general. So we fix this to ensure that any mental health professional licensed that they're going to see or that they're working with can make those diagnoses and allow them to continue on that pathway to getting the New York State veterans benefits.
Does the federal government's handling of this population seem like a real big abdication of its responsibility to these veterans?
I think so. And, you know, in a certain way, I mean, I was very proud of our opportunity to really move this forward and put it on the spotlight. And, you know, a couple of other states have done some combinations and started to work in this area. And I'm hoping, and I think I've heard that from different people that are, you know, what we did will inspire this administration to look at making some of those changes and some of, you know, the Congress members that you know, have observed what we did. So, you know, I hope we will be the catalyst for that change and, you know, and start seeing that happening across the country as well.
Do you have any sense up until now how many veterans have been able to benefit from the 2019 law or will be able to benefit moving forward as a result of this latest fix?
I don't have numbers. I think they're probably, we could start tracking them down, though. I think, you know, certainly last year, you know, put a freeze on a lot of things, even though it probably exacerbated those struggling with mental health issues, the programs and the access to programs. We did a hearing on COVID's impact on veterans, and it was pretty profound because a lot of veterans don't have adequate broadband or the resources to, you know, access telemedicine or telemental health. And so, you know, I think we'll, if we kind of start from now, we will be able to measure in, you know, a more effective way. But you know, I think these are things that are so important to do that the anecdotal stories are heartbreaking and inspiring and, you know, just really overwhelming because you realize between all of these issues, the post-traumatic stress, the military sexual trauma, and, you know, being gay under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I mean, these were just things that the government basically said you're being given an other than honorable discharge, no matter how honorably they performed. And it's it just is kind of stunning to think about that as the way that we, you know, that we approach the people who have stepped up to put their lives on the line for our country. So I think we're seeing a kind of a new era hopefully emerge, and that our restoration of honor legislation is kind of leading the way.
Sticking with the goal of connecting veterans with the services they need, the legislature also acted on your bill targeting veterans who suffered a traumatic brain injury. What will the Division of Veterans Services be required to do if Governor Cuomo signs your bill?
Well, this is kind of another dimension to, you know, what we've been working on, and it'll ask them to, or have them develop additional portals on their website to provide links to the appropriate government programs that have information on these areas, on, you know, the post-traumatic stress and traumatic brain injury. And these really are kind of lifelines for veterans and their families as, you know, as they continue their journey to readjusting to civilian life. I mean, a lot of times you have veterans who really, you know, physically they look like they're fine and they're struggling with demons, or they're struggling with even psychosomatic symptoms, and, you know, really have no way to understand what's going on. So these, hopefully these portals will be another access point for them to start adjusting to civilian life and accessing services that they need.
Why the focus on, say, an online portal for accessing these services? Are there other ways to do this as well? Because, like you mentioned, veterans, like a lot of other New Yorkers, don't necessarily have access to internet services. So are you concerned at all that while making it more accessible for veterans with online access and can navigate websites, that there will be a population that still is left behind, and these are people who have suffered traumatic brain injury?
You know, I think this is just one piece of it. You know, we've certainly, the division has other outreach and other programmatic ways that they're reaching people. We just wanted to be sure that the website also had that information. Interestingly, the internet has proven to be a kind of the Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans VFW posts and that kind of thing. I mean, this is where the chat rooms are. This is where the communication is. This is where, you know, a lot of peer-to-peer contact is made. So I think, you know, it will certainly focus on, you know, on those that are turning to websites and using the internet more for their communication and their access, and, you know, less for perhaps the older veterans or those in more rural settings that don't have that access. But, you know, we're really looking to reach people wherever they are. And that's been a challenge. I mean, that is, you know, definitely something in, you know, as my experience of being chair, and I don't come from a military background at all, is understanding that there's a lot of different ways that you have to reach people. And that's the only way to be effective.
The legislature also adopted your measure expanding access to a state scholarship for family members of veterans who died while in service. Can you walk me through a little bit about the technical expansion of this bill, which includes some time changes as well as some definition changes?
So currently the Merit Scholarship, which stands for Military Enhanced Recognition Incentive and Tribute Scholarship, currently it's only available to Gold Star families, and those are families who have lost their life in combat. It's only been available to Gold Star families and to service members and their dependents if the member served on or after August 2nd, 1990 and became severely and permanently disabled or died or was classified as missing in action in a combat zone or during military training operations for duty in a combat zone. So what this new bill does is it removes both the requirements regarding the date of service and the conditions that the member's death, service-related permanent disability, or missing in action MIA status occurred specifically in a combat zone or during training for duty in a combat zone. Because it's our feeling that everybody is, once they're in the military, they're training for duty in a combat zone. You know, what we don't combat has changed very much, obviously, since World War II, even the Vietnam War. And, you know, we want to be sure these families have already paid a really high price, have access to the educational opportunities to fulfill their dreams. And, you know, this was a bill that, and a program, because this is a unique bill. This is not, you know, a couple of people had other versions of this, but they only covered one part or the other. But this bill covers both of those, and it passed through both houses, and I think really made a difference for, and will continue to make a difference for, a lot of families who have really paid a steep price already and will be able to offer their dependents, their kids, their grandchildren, an opportunity to go back and be, you know, healthcare providers or, you know, live their dreams in whatever it is.
Do you have a sense of how many more applicants might emerge as the result of this expansion, and subsequently as the result of that potential increase, how much more the state might end up spending on this? And is this a program where everybody who applies gets access, or is it a first come, first serve based on like a limited pool of money?
You know, I'm not actually sure on the structure of it. I don't think they have ever used up all the money that they have available, that I've been told. So we did some research to find out how many potentially eligible service members there would be, and it came up to maybe, you know, less than 500. However, because this date goes backwards, most of these service members are older rather than younger, in the sense that they, you know, if their own children in all likelihood would not necessarily be the dependents that are, you know, that are applying for this scholarship. It might be grandchildren, probably isn't a spouse. So I think, you know, that the likelihood that this is going to be a huge number of people, you know, given that those potentially eligible are, you know, is less than 500 is not great. And, you know, and what I've been told on several occasions is that this particular scholarship is not necessarily exhausted and doesn't get the attention that you would think. And hopefully maybe with expanding it in this way and the publicity that we're getting around it, it will become more on the radar screen. But it's usually, you know, we've heard from people, and this was the case in what, you know, that triggered this legislation in the first place, was a constituent who thought that his daughter, who was initially going to go to a SUNY school and then found a program that really fit her interests and her desires more in a small private New York State upstate school, that suddenly she couldn't access this money because of the date that, you know, that he had served in and when his injuries occurred. And so I think, you know, it's people who kind of do the hard work to find out about these programs that we're hoping we'll be able to take advantage of. And, you know, and I think that, you know, the pool of people, again, is in general is probably shrinking, not growing.
Turning to one more bill, in the final week of the legislative session, you and your colleagues also approved legislation redefining the period of service classifying someone as a Vietnam veteran. Unless President Biden has launched an attack I'm not aware of, why do we need to revisit the definition of a Vietnam veteran?
The federal law has identified the date as the beginning of the war from November 1st, 1955.
Okay.
And, you know, we had been using the February 28th, 1961 date. So now we are consistent and in conformity with the definition enacted by federal law. And, you know, it recognizes that those who were in Vietnam serving for those years actually were serving during the Vietnam War rather than just happened to be in Vietnam at that time. And, you know, there are benefits, obviously, of being a veteran from, you know, a war period that it makes them eligible for.
And finally, on Memorial Day, Governor Cuomo announced that the state will have its own veteran cemetery out in Seneca County. What does this announcement mean to you? And what do you think of the location that was chosen by the state panel?
Well, this was a process that we did facilitate, and my goal in doing this was the division had come to us and said, you know, we want to do this. We've got this Samson site. It's perfect. It's up, you know, practically ready. And I kind of said, well, I want to understand more about this. This was a couple of years ago. And I talked to some of my colleagues who had come to me, and there are colleagues who have expressed interest since I became chair in having a state cemetery in their districts, and, you know, they've got members of the community who, you know, have been advancing that idea and who, you know, have a site. And so we did go through a process where, you know, we created a siting selection committee, and we did open up the possibility that this could happen. And, you know, this siting committee, which worked pretty quickly to push through what they had wanted in the first place, you know, identified this Samson site in Seneca Falls. And I think the important thing for me is that there is an opportunity for other communities to come forward and do this too, if they feel that this is something that they want. We created a process. And the fact that this is the first one doesn't mean that it's the only one or the last one. New York State has been one of only a few states that doesn't have a state-run veterans cemetery. So, I think it's important, and it means a lot to many of our veterans and their families to be able to have, you know, our own state-run cemetery. And I'm happy that we were able to provide a process to make this happen. And, you know, we'll see where it goes from there.
Do you think you'll visit the Seneca County location?
I will, yeah. No, I'm kind of, you know, I find it really interesting. You know, I've learned a huge amount as the chair of this committee. Like I said earlier, I don't come from a military background, but I, you know, I've had the opportunity to, you know, to visit Normandy Beach and Hawaii to the Arizona. I mean, just, you know, things that I know about and I learned it historically, but, you know, really to understand it in a different way and to talk to veterans here. I mean, I think that we have a broad range of veterans in the state that have are still very angry about the Vietnam War and the way they were treated when they came back. And then we've got younger veterans who, you know, are coming back in physical and mental shape that, you know, that no one would have even imagined prior to this because of the, you know, the type of fighting that's going on. And, you know, and I feel like particularly in the area of mental health that, you know, this is something that I want to keep talking about because I feel like if we can reduce the stigma for our heroes, our veterans, that we can do some work to get this more services and more recognition and understanding of those issues for the mainstream part of the population. So to answer, as a long way to answer your question, I feel like there's, you know, that understanding a lot of bigger issues through the lens of how it's impacted veterans and how, you know, veterans see things is, you know, has been a real opportunity for me.
Based on your experience, you know, growing into this leadership role of this veterans committee, do you think whenever the next game of assembly committee musical chairs happens that you'll try to hang on to veterans affairs or would you want to pass it along to the next person?
You know, I think probably pass it along to the next person because I have a lot of other interests, but, you know, it depends on what other options are, you know, are available. But, you know, it's been a huge honor, as I said, and, you know, and a wonderful learning experience for me to be able to advocate for veterans. And, you know, it's one of those issues that every single member in whatever house, you know, the Senate or the Assembly has veterans in their community. And so it's a pretty... You know, it's a pretty bipartisan issue. It should be a bipartisan issue. And I, you know, I have a very purple district, so that's, you know, been interesting for me to, you know, to be able to advocate for veterans in that context. But I have a lot of other interests too. And so we'll see. We'll see what the options are.
Well, we've been speaking with Assemblymember Dee Dee Barrett. She's a Hudson Valley Democrat who chairs the Chamber's Committee on Veterans Affairs and got a whole bunch of veterans bills through the legislature this year. Assemblymember, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much,